Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 148, recorded on January 19th, 2012. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me tonight is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Ready to talk about some fancy new stuff from Apple. Finally, it's great to have something actually that exists to talk about instead of just rumors.
That's true. You know, and another thing to complain about too.
Yeah,
people are going to find out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Also here is Bill Palmer from Beat Week Magazine. Hey, Bill, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm down here in Anaheim covering NAMM, and just walked in off the show floor. I'm glad to be talking to you guys. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's great to have you. It's always good to have you, and especially since you can't use your standard setup right now. You're actually talking to us on an iPhone via Skype.
Yeah, sitting here in a hotel room with the worst Wi-Fi in the history of Wi-Fi, so I hope I sound good enough.
You sound actually very, very good.
Cool.
Yep.
Is it the classic, you think it's the classic this is a Wi-Fi problem. So AT&T's hold, I guess I'm assuming you have AT&T iPhone.
Yeah, at this point, the AT&T network is far better than the Wi-Fi at the hotel, so for once, AT&T, just as once.
Yeah.
It gets a little credit.
Awesome.
But if you want me to wail on AT&T later, I will. I'm one of the... throttling victims.
We are going to talk about that.
We need to talk about that
good,
and the new plans, which are just the funniest joke ever. And by funny, I mean irritating.
What do you want to talk about that right now?
Might be the whole show.
Set it up, Adam, since you brought it up.
Oh, well, AT&T comes out with new data plans on the 22nd. Is that when they're rolling them out? And I love how they gave us everybody like a lot of advance notice, like, oh yeah, we're changing over the data plan.
You still there, Adam?
Better, because we recognize you as our customers, you're using a lot more data, so we're going to give you another gigabyte basically on each one of the plans. So you know they have the data plus, well, okay, it's 100 megabytes more on the data plus. Is that what they call it? It was 250 megs a month. That's going to go up to 300 or 350.
It's 300.
Oh, so they only give you 50 there for $5 more. Yeah, mm-hmm. Great. Yay, thanks. And then on the Data Pro plan, you get another gig, which normally...
You're saying from the original Data Pro?
Yeah,
so from now
the original Data Pro,
from
two gigabytes to 3 gigabytes.
Yep.
And for $5. And if you had gone over, so say you were one of those people that were on the Data Pro and you went over, you get charged another 10. So
for another gig.
AT&T, yeah, for another gig. So AT&T marketing speak and thinking is, oh, we're actually giving you a whole another gig for less than you would pay if you had to pay for it. And then, of course, everybody who has existing plans, we're going to let you keep those plans because you're grandfathered in. So let's decipher all of the problems with this and how this is really not AT&T making things better for us. It's AT&T adding $5 more per customer into their pockets, which is what this really is all about, if you ask me.
Well,
so the first
uglier.
Thing, yeah, first, well, the first thing, yeah, right. The first thing is if you want to buy the fact that AT&T, when they sold dropping the unlimited and moving everybody to the capped plans, their whole marketing thing was, well, 95 or I forget what percentage they said, but you know, most of our customers don't use more than 2 gigabytes. We know this. We've done all the data. Nobody's using more than 2 gigs. So 2 gigs is plenty for the majority of our customers. So now they're saying, oh, we're going to give you for only $5. You know, these plans are better because it's only $5 more and we're giving you a whole nother gig of data. And I'm thinking, well, that's the whole gig of data that you're saying nobody uses, or you just said nobody uses. Oh, but they're using it now because times have changed. Yet, like you were saying, Bill, suddenly using 2 gigs of data puts you into the top 5%. So that means you're really only in the 5% of people that are going over that cap. So once again, they're proving themselves wrong and saying, no, they want to say it one side of their mouth, customers are using more data. On the other side of the mouth, they're saying, well, no, you're not, customers aren't using that much data.
Okay. So you didn't actually address the throttling part.
No, I didn't get to the throttling part yet. Yeah.
Want me to handle that one?
Go for it.
Well, here's the thing, you know, I'm not a big data user. I use Wi-Fi with my iPhone at home. I don't tether. I don't typically download one of the occasional song. I'm not a big data user, but the only reason I'm still with AT&T is because of the unlimited data. And I've always known if they took that away from me, I would go to one of the other iPhone carriers because AT&T is the worst voice carrier. What happened with me was the day after they announced the T-Mobile buyout had fallen through, they sent me a text that said, I'm in the top 5% of data users, and if I keep it up, they're going to throttle me. Well, I looked at the numbers, and it confirmed what I always knew. I'm well below 2 gigs. I'm historically, I have never come close to being in the top 5%. All of a sudden, my data usage supposedly went up by a factor of, I mean, more than doubled in that month, which, looking at my own usage, was not possible. So I have no trouble accusing them of having fraudulently boosted my usage somehow. And I'm not even, I love Siri, but I rarely use it except when I'm driving. So all of a sudden, my data conveniently went up by double. Now they're telling me I'm the top 5%. Even though the number they're accusing me of using, I think, is around 2 gigs. So supposedly, you know, and what amazes me is, you know, I mean, you guys know Jason Tucker, who's also on BeatWeek. He also got the same thing. He uses data for everything. I mean, he streams video. He does all kinds of things. He uses 5 times the data that he does. And he got the same thing I did, but it's just so comical that they hit me, because I think what they're really doing is everyone who's in the unlimited data, who is still keeping that plan, automatically got that text. And if they weren't using enough data to justify it, then the number, I'll accuse them of faking it. There's no other explanation. I mean, I'm still talking to other people, our readers who've had that happen to us. But, I mean, it looks like they just boost everybody's numbers up to try to, you know, and of course the text conveniently says, feel free to switch over to our limited data plan. Then you won't be throttled. You'll just be charged. Like, okay, fine. But in that case, I'm moving to another carrier. So I'm just, you know, I mean, it's Sprint or Verizon. It's a coin flip right now because I don't know which is the best option. But I'm done with AT&T the minute I can figure out who I'm going to. If they wanted to get rid of me, they succeeded.
Well, I haven't actually gotten that text message, and I am notoriously a big iPhone data user.
And you're on unlimited?
I'm on unlimited, yeah.
Wow.
Did I talk about on this show, I can't remember what I had found out when I called them, because I called AT&T and I escalated my call because the rep couldn't answer. I specifically wanted to know about, you know, that top 5%, because I was getting messages exactly like you're saying, Bill, from listeners. They were sending me emails and they were saying, I only use 1.5 gigs of data and I got the text message. And I'm like, what the, that doesn't make any sense. Well, how could you be in the top 5%? If you're only using that much. Question I have for you, is your iPhone still registered in, are you in Florida or are you, where is your service, where's your phone number coming from? I guess
that's
would be the
good question. No, the number is an LA area code, but I have been with them since I was living in Florida. If you ask me what my billing address is, I'm not sure I could tell you because I pay online.
Okay,
but that is a good question.
This may shed some light on why, if that's the case. But I would imagine in LA you would not be in the top 5%, because this is specifically what they told me when it escalated up, and I thought it was BS because it doesn't treat everybody fairly. They said basically it's top 5% in your market, so whatever area you are in, if you hit that top 5%, so that means if you're in a real rural area and you're that one guy that uses a lot of data. You know, you could be hitting it at 1 gigabyte. And it's like, explain to me how that's like, you can't roll it that way. But that's how they're apparently rolling it.
You just said it before. I mean, they're stooping to marketing doublespeak where they'll say anything for anyone who's willing to fall for it. I mean, what does AT&T actually have? Other than having had iPhone exclusivity, is there any reason to be on AT&T? They're expensive. They're the worst with the LTE rollout. I mean, you know, the voice is usually, I haven't used the others hands-on, but their voice usually comes out the worst in the hands-on testing with the tech publications. There's really no reason to stay on AT&T at this point unless you're a sucker. And that's what my verdict is now. And I was only staying with the unlimited data. They're taking that away with me. I'm a sucker if I stay. I just don't know. Yeah. I mean, if Verizon would give me unlimited data, I'd switch tomorrow. And I may, when I get home from this conference, I may call them up and try to, I've heard of stories of people being able to cajole Verizon into giving you unlimited data if you'll switch. Sprint, I don't know. Their 3G is so slow. I don't know if it's worth it to have their unlimited data for you know, unlimited slow data.
Well, let me tell you right now. So in my current data usage period, I'm at, I'm kind of surprised how high it is right now. 3.3 gigs I've used.
And I haven't due to get the letter.
I haven't gotten one. I didn't get it.
Or the text. Yeah, I think it's totally, it's remarkable. Totally random.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
it must
I'll tell you something. Jason and I both got ours the day after the T-Mobile deal fell through. So it's almost like that was plan B. Let's attack the people on the unlimited
plan. Let's piss everybody off, sure. So, okay,
and
so what
knows why they targeted us but not you. That is weird.
So the throttling is really awful. I was trying to find a link. One of the websites, I think App Advice.
It was App Advice, yeah.
Did a video showing how bad it gets when it's throttled, and they throttle you for a whole month. I mean, it's ridiculous. So again, it's this marketing speak of, well, you still get unlimited, but it's completely unusable unlimited, so you don't want it. So
right, it's I think they either don't have the guts or they're not sure if they have the legal standing to simply shut down the unlimited plans that have been grandfathered. So this is their way of forcing you into, but by making you choose. They made unlimited so undesirable that you'll leave it, and then you can't go back and sue them or whatever. For taking it away from you, because in the end you chose to give it up voluntarily with a gun to your head.
So I didn't get to the grandfathered part. So the marketing speak on when they came out and said, well, you know, if you have one of our existing plans, our Data Plus or our Data Pro or whatever, your grandfathered, you can keep your plan and your pricing. And you know why that is they're it's not their kindness, of course. No one
they're contractually
fooled
obligated.
By that, but. Yeah, they're contractually obligated, and if they force you to switch, you can break your contract. So you know all those people that just bought that new iPhone 4S and got a 2 gigabyte Data Plus plan? They could jump ship without paying ETF fees if AT&T forced them onto a higher priced data plan,
and
they could all jump to Verizon, and AT&T knows it.
Yeah, if I have to replace this iPhone 4S with another iPhone 4S from another carrier, I'm not paying the ETF. I'll just harass them every day and you know, until they give in because of what you just said.
Now, you guys are both on 4Ss?
I am.
Do you think it might have something to do with the fact that I don't have a 4S, that they haven't contacted me about this?
I haven't gotten the message, and I use well above. Around two gigs every month.
The fact that you, Adam, you use as much data as I do, or you use as much data as they're suddenly claiming I do, and Michael, you use even more than me. I mean, what kind of selective enforcement nonsense is that, too? That, I mean, if I'm supposedly in the top 5%, then you guys definitely are. And it's just weird.
After they explained it to me, I just chalked it up. Well, I'm in San Diego, and there's probably a lot of people using a lot of data in San Diego. But so I'm baffled by you and Jason, because you and Jason, I know, is definitely, you know, L.A. So I don't know if they're doing it by cell tower, by, you know, who the frick knows? That's the problem, in my opinion, with that whole model. It's just like you can't just randomly select people. You have to set a number that people can, like, watch their data usage and go, that makes sense.
I mean, I'm not trying to get political here, but this is cell phone companies are an industry that was, you know, grew up during an era of total lack of regulation, and there are literally no laws for these companies to follow, and they're really, you know, minimal ones, and so stuff, pretty much anything they do is legal because nobody's ever bothered to tell these companies what would be illegal. So nothing's going to stop them. You know, I'm going to move to Verizon or Sprint. They're going to find a different way to screw me.
That's my biggest thing. I think I've said that on this show before, is my biggest frustration is this is the one industry where classic economics that we all went to school for about supply and demand and, you know, consumers and it's totally backwards. They want to do everything in their power not to give consumers what they want, and then we pay for it.
Right.
Yep.
It's wonderful. Like,
there needs to be serious papers and studies done on how all that works out, because it's a direct contradiction.
This particular industry has gotten a free pass, you know, even as other industries, banking industry, whatever, being clamped down on, and cell phone industries. I never hear any politician on either side or anywhere. Nobody says up and let's regulate the cell phone companies. I'm like, really? Nobody? Not even, you know, nobody? And the guy says, let's regulate everything. He says, let's regulate the cell phone carriers. Like, okay.
I'm not a big fan of regulation, but... You know, I think the problem is there's no consumer choice. It's like your cable company too, you know, and your internet. That's a whole nother area where you have the same problem. Yeah. There's very few choice for consumers, and you know, it's the not monopoly, but oligopoly.
You know, people,
oligopoly, is that what they call it when there's just a couple choices?
Yeah, just a handful. And I mean, you know, with the, you know, they're colluding on some level, if not actively, then at least, you know, I mean, but I mean, what are you going to do? And until the majority of people, you know, say, you know, we're not going to stand for this anymore, then nothing's going to change. You know,
well, it's funny.
The three
it's
of
funny.
Us can't change anything.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I was, you know, one of the only reasons I had not moved to Verizon or somebody else is I believe Verizon's data plans are now in line with these new ones from AT&T. They were about $5 more expensive for kind of the similar amount of data, which is why I didn't want to, why I didn't bother switching when I got my 4S, because I did. I looked into the plans and it was just going to be, you know, that much more. It wasn't a lot more. And I had left Verizon. I'm not a big Verizon fan either. So it's just sort of like, now it seems like when one raises their prices, then the other one comes up to the same level, which again is completely the opposite of economics. Like, they're supposed to compete, but competition drives prices up. What's up with that?
Well, it's not real competition, you know. I mean, you can imagine what these, you know, companies must be talking about on the sly. Well, we're going to do this, you do that.
Still there, Bill? You there, Adam?
I think we lost him. Yep, I'm here.
Okay.
He's totally right, though.
Yeah, it's... I don't like thinking about it. I like to pretend that I'm just going to get my... I'm going to keep my unlimited data forever, and they're not going to catch me. But no, so the actual throttling that happens on AT&T, the data speeds are, they say, lower and worse than edge speeds.
Oh, yeah.
You know what the fascinating part is? Oh, I'm back,
there
by the way.
There you are.
Yeah, they haven't throttled me yet. I mean, I guess as evidenced by the fact that I'm talking to you on Skype right now.
Sure.
They warned me like the day after the merger, which was a month ago. They said I was getting close to it. And then a few days ago, they texted me and said, you're now being throttled. Well, I was wondering, because you just said it's sub-edge speeds. It hasn't happened yet, because I've been wondering if it was just some little 10% thing I hadn't noticed. Or, you know, the hammer's probably going to drop on me right while I'm in Macworld, and I'll be over at the Verizon store that night trying to change over.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be definitely that would be the moment when it actually happens and when it actually kicks in for you. It's when you definitely need it.
Of course.
Yeah,
that's great customer service.
I got a random text message saying that I was roaming internationally.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I thought, and I thought at that point, are they just like sending me everything? Next, going to say a text message that says your mother dresses you funny? Are you that desperate to get me to leave your carrier? Am I that expensive to you?
Yep. All right. So Apple had an announcement today talking about some really cool stuff. They announced, well, education-based things for us. iBooks 2, which facilitates the new textbook initiative that Apple is doing. So iBooks 2 has multi-touch textbooks that you can download, and
well, maybe.
Well, okay. So you bought a textbook to give it a try, and it's not downloading for you right now, right?
No, I got the samples, and I got the Life on Earth thing, which is, I think it's free, but it's really only, it's like a chapter, and it's from E.O. Wilson, and it's sort of like this introduction to what e-textbook is going to look like, and then kind of some sample articles in different styles of interactivity and stuff like that. So it gives you a good idea of what they're trying to accomplish with it. And I think on the textbook store, there's a total of 8 textbooks right now. So, you know, just like anything, when they launch any one of these new services, be it movies or TV, or, you know, they've got these select partners, McGraw-Hill and Pearson and EO, which I think somebody I read somewhere said covers pretty much like 95% of the K-12 textbook market. As far as I know, I don't think universities are included. Like, university textbooks are in the mix yet.
Yeah, they're just focusing on high school texts right now.
Yeah, and it's made. Yeah, exactly. All the 8 that are up there now, I think, are 9th through 12th.
Yeah. And but So the interesting thing about it is, and basically what we talked about last week, I think we hit every single bit that they really announced, which is inexpensive textbooks, stuff with really rich multimedia stuff. So you get movies, you get slideshows, you get interactive diagrams, you have 3D models, and just basically everything that you would ever hope to have in a digital textbook they have here, including really fast interface.
Yeah, which is, and I think I got distracted and forgot the part that I ended up buying a full textbook and it never it still hasn't downloaded. Sorry, I'll just throw that in there, and it's kind of peeving me off because it's classic Apple. We can't handle cloud. You know, we had no idea this many people would want to actually use these things.
Yeah, what happened to that big data center? They have. They're using that for something else. They're using it for.
Well, they have a big data center, and then they have just one like little phone line in a 6400 baud modem or whatever.
No, come on, it's like a T3 or something.
I know it. They've been throttled by AT&T.
They've been throttled by.
The entire data center is on an iPhone tether.
They went over their 2 petabyte limit.
Uh huh. But so you get. So you get all that interactive multimedia. So there are actually two different views for the textbooks. There's the landscape view and there's the portrait view. And the landscape view is more multimedia centered, although it does give you all the text and stuff. But if you want to just focus on the text itself, you turn to portrait and you get more just text, and you can scroll through the pages but you can still at the same time bring up the multimedia stuff, which is very cool. I'm looking at.
Can I say one thing about that kind of bugs me?
Sure.
So that I thought, that's kind of a cool thing. So I can get the full like interactive pictures and diagrams and video and stuff like that, and you can actually get it in both modes. It looks like in most of the textbooks that I've been able to try out so far, when you put it into portrait, you kind of get a little sidebar that has that content in it, as opposed to it kind of being in line.
Right.
But in landscape mode, you flip through and it's like page by page. But when you go into portrait mode, it's just a long scrolling. Yeah. It feels like you're on a website, and I'm like, this is not a book experience. I want in portrait mode, I want the page turn. I want to just like. Have the page curl that iBooks has, and it's not there. I was a little bit disappointed by that.
Oh yeah.
I want to go page by page. I don't want to have a big, giant scrolling thing.
They might have had an issue with doing that.
It's probably the EPUB format or something like that.
Well, they're not even using.
And they're not even using EPUB. That's right.
Yeah,
right.
They borrowed heavily, I believe, is what they said. The EPUB 3 stuff. So what else you got? Oh, you get there's highlighting and stuff, study cards, glossary. Let me see here. Okay, oops. Too many pinch gestures that you can do with this thing. Yeah, highlighting. And then so what you can do is with all these highlights and the glossary terms and all that stuff, you have a study cards. So you can, all the stuff that you highlighted, bookmarked, and added notes for, you can go through with the study cards, and then you can go and actually study the glossary of terms. So you can, glossary terms and highlighted notes, turn on a shuffle. Yeah, this is really cool. Okay, so I can look at what resonance is and rays and standing waves and all this other stuff. I'm looking at the physics book, which is really cool. I think this would be great, especially because you can really just tell it what you want in terms of whatever you highlight. There you go. That's what you are studying, which is great. So the way that these books are made is with another app that Apple introduced, which is the iBooks Author app. And that is available for Lion only. So if you're on Snow Leopard like I am, you can't get it. But it's kind of developed by the same team who worked on the iWork application. So it's very much like an iWork app, and it's a WYSIWYG composer for developing not only textbooks, but any book that'll work in iBooks. So So this isn't just for textbook authors. It's for any author to create their books in a very interactive and wonderful way and put them out to the iBook store. Now, it's not exactly EPUB 3, like we said. It's a slightly tweaked version as far as we can tell right now, and which means it probably won't work with anything but iBooks 2. And in fact, for any publisher that wants to get in the iBook store, they have to, that content that they create with the iBooks author has to be exclusive to the iBook store.
Only if they're going to distribute it for sale.
Okay, so if it's free, then it's fine. Is that what you mean? Okay.
You can give it away any way you want. And actually, that brings up the question, like one piece that I looked at, because it's in the license agreement of the iBooks author app that says if you produce something with the iBooks author software and it's going to be for sale, you have to sell it through the iBook store, which is just this weird concept, right? Like, it's like telling somebody, a photographer that's with Photoshop, okay, you can only sell through, this photo service,
well,
and
no,
you
it's
can't
not,
put it on that photo service.
But they're not charging for the iBooks author software.
You know what it is, though? I mean, Apple, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been throttled yet. Apple is also, paranoid for a reason. I know a lot of this is, it's a competitive thing, it's a strategic thing, but everything Apple does used to be automatically copied by Microsoft. Now it's automatically copied by Google. There will be a half-baked copycat Android, so-called equivalent in a few months, which the anti-Apple fanatics will go around telling everyone is better because it's more open. And I'm sure they'll make the, quote marks with their fingers when they say open, because they don't know what that means either. But Apple, as we've seen from some of the stuff Jobs said in his biography, Apple is very paranoid about Google stealing everything. And anytime I hear something like that where it says they have to do it, it just makes me think that they're trying to make sure that, Google can't come up with some, a copycat solution that just kind of siphons off of, something that Apple developed from scratch. That's all.
Well, yeah, and like I said, it's free, and they did actually put a lot of work into developing for that, and one of the reasons they're giving it away for free is because they want to encourage publishers to put their content on the iBook store. So it doesn't seem unreasonable to me for them to do that, especially with all the wonderful features that they have available in there for the publishers. The other interesting thing is, I believe,
I got to stop you there, because I'm reading into this more, and I don't think they get a pass just because they're giving away the software for free.
No,
I really don't. I mean, yes, it's a tool, that's fine, but it's just bizarre. So, that'd be like modifying an open source license to say, well, you can use this as long as you don't sell the things you produce for it. It's one thing about if you or redistributing the software itself, like an open source license. But we're talking about the content that's created with a piece of software. And I can't think of any other time or any other piece of software that's ever done that before.
Well, no, I don't think it's the content. They're just talking about software, the actual content that's been created with
right,
the software.
Right.
So I'm not saying the actual content within it. So if you take
it's like if I were going to go get OpenOffice and write a book that I wanted to go publish and sell through, say, the Kindle store. They would say, oh, no, you can't do that because you used our free software. You even though you created it and just wrote it, because you used our software to actually create the file that you sent to the publisher, you have to sell it through our system.
Yeah, but it's top to bottom with the iBook store. It's an actual iBooks format. So if you're taking the same Word file, so you feed in a Word file to the iBooks author app, which you can do, which is great because you can import the stuff you already have. That doesn't mean you can't take that same Word file and use it to publish a physical book or something to another ebook store or anything like that. They're just saying the actual files that are created with the iBooks author app can't be used.
They can't be sold outside the iBook store.
Right. Those files can't be sold.
Yeah. But, it gets even weirder because the license agreement is agreed upon when I open up the software and start using it and create something with it, right? So now I've agreed that I won't sell my book, but what happens if I take that finished file and I give it to you, Michael, and you've never used the app and you've never signed up for it, and I say, you know what, Michael, you can have this for free. Do whatever you want with it. You can sell it. Now, can you sell it? Because you never agreed to those terms.
I mean, I just don't understand what your point is.
The point is I think it's ridiculous to put out the tool and then be like, okay, you can't sell this outside our store because you're using our software. It's just a weird thing.
The tool is really for selling it through that store. And the features just don't exist anywhere else, and maybe they will at some point. But
I'd rather see them sell the tool and make money off the software and then let people produce cool stuff with it and sell and distribute however they want.
Well, the issue is interoperability and the actual features that are available on the iPad and the way that they execute all those things. They want to maintain an actual continuity with the stuff that they're having their publishers produce, and they really want them to have great stuff on the iPad, but it's not compatible with other things. And it would take
Want 30%.
They also want 30%, sure. I mean, they're actually doing...
Let's just say what it is. They want 30%, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
They need to get money somewhere.
Right. So I would rather have the tools available and push the EPUB format forward and have them sell the software.
Well, I think that they probably would have wanted to.
I'd pay $200 for it or whatever, if then I could turn around and sell it wherever I want. And chances are, if it's integrated enough, but most people are going to choose iBooks anyway. Like, it seems like they're forcing it also almost for no reason. Because just based on sheer number of devices out there, but I think you're absolutely right. They're worried about Amazon. They're worried about Google stealing the stuff away. I get it all. And this is classic Apple. I mean, Apple's always operated this way anyway.
Well, certainly.
And I'm not saying it's justified. I mean, I haven't been able to look at it today as much as you guys have. It's fascinating to hear you present both sides. I mean, I can't justify it or not based on what little I've heard. But whether it's justified or not, I really do think that, you know, I mean, it may almost be a bad thing. I mean, other companies are being so sociopathic in the way in which they automatically copycat and steal Apple stuff, that Apple is so paranoid that they put in all these restrictions that, you know, might end up hurting consumers because they're really trying to keep companies from stealing from them.
I don't think that this type of restriction hurts consumers. I think it helps consumers, because if consumers are getting something that's ported from software that is designed to be targeted for a very specific application, a very specific platform that has all these things thought through, then you're going to get this secondhand, less than experience that Apple is fundamentally against. And if, you know, on one hand, they want publishers to get really excited and get all their content out there in this wonderful format that they provide. And I think that part of the reason they didn't use EPUB 3 entirely is because some of the things in terms of interactivity that they wanted to do just couldn't be done with the standard EPUB 3 format. But I also think that they wanted to have the software available for anybody to try out and use and get going with, so they would be excited about putting this, whatever they create, out there, and the way that they figured best to allow that creation of some of these features is to make a more proprietary system. So,
yeah. And, you know, I'm kind of taking sides maybe a little early. I need to dig into it more as well, but I just don't want to paint it all rosy that this is all a good thing. I think it is something that should be looked at and questioned like we're doing here. So,
yeah, you know. I think ultimately Apple's heart is in the right place in terms of what we're seeing initially with this initial launch of the product, and what we're seeing in terms of the pricing. We haven't even talked about the fact that it seems like they're putting a cap on what publishers can charge for a textbook, which is $15 or under.
Wow, I remember what textbooks cost when I was in college.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big deal.
You know, I'll say this, though. It's one of these things where, you know, sometimes Apple announces these things and they put these certain restrictions, and then if too many people complain and it becomes too big of a deal, then those restrictions are eased by the time, you know, it really kicks in. You know, we've seen that before. Just like when Apple announced something as a certain spec. Like, I mean, I think back to the first iMac at a 33.6 modem. Everybody went nuts. Oh, it should be 56. And so by the time it shipped, it did, you know. So they may just be trying to see what they can get away with. They float this, and if the complaints are minimal, then they get away with it. And if the complaints are significant, then they'll drop it before too long. Well, it would be the first time.
I think that if the complaints are significant and they're well justified, and Apple can actually see the other side of the argument, and it makes more sense for them to change what they're doing, sure. But I think that generally speaking, Apple's philosophy has been kind of derived from Steve Jobs's philosophy of making the best thing possible, and I think some of these restrictions comes directly from that drive to make the stuff as good as they possibly can.
Well, and see, I'd rather see them behave the way that they ask the music industry to behave, or anybody else to behave, when it comes to any kind of restrictions or DRM from a legal standpoint.
Sure.
And just say, look, we're going to build the best platform, the best devices, the best software for creating this stuff, and you're just going to want to put it on our service because we're going to be the best at it. And we don't need to have these artificial, you know, legal lines of restrictions in, you know, a EULA to keep you on our platform. We're just going to create awesome iPads and a way to create great books that run on the iPad. And you're just going to want to sell through us because it's going to be a hassle to do it anyplace else.
And, you know, I agree with you.
I think it's going to happen naturally. I don't think they need this artificial restriction, and they're getting a lot of flack over it. And it just seems silly to me to a certain degree. Well, so I understand the frustration because it's just stupid.
If they had an option to export to EPUB in the iBooks author app, how would you feel about that if they allowed you to export to EPUB?
I don't even think they need that. This isn't about openness. This is just about silly legal stuff that's in there. And, you know.
So you're saying the fact that they said it.
Yeah,
that it's there at all.
It just frustrates me. It's you know, why impose this restriction? The thing only generates an iBook format anyway, right?
Right, and I think that it probably is there for what Bill said, is that they're paranoid about what the other companies are going to try to do, especially Google.
Set up a Google bookstore, yeah. and they would let you sell to iPads through their store.
I guarantee you Google's executives sitting around talking this evening about how to reverse engineer an iBooks compatible format.
Oh, sure, yeah. And I think that's probably why Apple has that in there. I think that's the biggest reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, it's more block, and it's a lot of the mentality that we're talking about is like, we've gotten away from let's just make the best, coolest products and compete to let's find all the ways where we can lock people into a system and make it so that they can't leave or move or go anyplace else, and that's how we're going to profit. And if I'm going to be critical of AT&T or anybody else doing it, I have to be critical of Apple doing it.
Well, you know, I don't think it's entirely that locked down. I think because, like I said, you can import pages, you can import Word documents into the iBooks author, and as most publishers that exist right now already do, they have their stuff in another format that they're going to want to adapt to the iBooks experience. And so I don't see them trying to lock
you in. This has nothing to do with where you can use it, though, Michael. This has to do with where you sell it, right? This is, I create an iBook, and I now have to, if I want to profit from that, Apple is my only choice.
That's true. But, I mean, you're saying because you can't sell it through your own application?
I can't put it on my website and say, you know what, I only want to charge $5, but because I'm a self-publisher and I don't want to give Apple the 30%. It's about the 30%, right?
Okay.
It's the same thing, the same arguments we've had over apps.
Sure.
It's the 30%, but it's also doing it through iTunes. I mean, no offense, but no one should be downloading it off your website and trying to figure out how to rig it to get it on their iPhone.
You're hitting my exact point. I'm not saying that people would want to. I think Apple makes an attractive enough thing that most people are going to want to use that platform and choose that model anyway.
You know, there's also this army of hardcore geeks that are trying, no matter what Apple comes out with, it's automatic and simple for consumers. Every normal consumer has a crazed obsession best geek in their life who's desperate to get them to do things the hard way. I mean, we don't talk about it much. You know what I mean? It's like the dumbass who tries to get grandma to jailbreak her iPhone just so he can, you know, feel better about his own ego that he got one more jailbreaker to join the cult. You know, I'm not saying there aren't reasons to jailbreak, but for grandma, no. And Apple is always fighting against these people who are screwing up the Apple experience for the other 99% of consumers who aren't geeks. And I mean, I think Apple just really gets paranoid. And then they see things like you were saying, they try to, you know, make the best products and compete. Well, they tried that with the iPhone. And Google and Samsung and HTC came along and committed grand theft larceny. And knowing that they would eventually lose in the courts, but knowing that they could build up 50-something percent market share during the few years before the courts finally shut them down, and you know, and build this you know, this criminal platform that is Android, and now it's too big that these companies are out of their minds with the way they stalk Apple, and I'm not shocked that Apple is a little out of its mind with the way that it's now trying to rig things to be as big a jackass as Google and Samsung are when it comes to cheating.
Yeah. Although you know, but to be fair, Adam,
there, that would be cool.
To be fair, Adam, what you're talking about with, in terms of just making the best stuff and leaving it a little bit more open and just saying, well, we have the best stuff here. You make the decision. You go with the other platform or you go with us.
Yeah. And I don't want to have to figure out if I'm already self-publishing a book, I don't want to have to figure out how to set up a website and take payments and deal with all that garbage. When Apple says, look, here, you can one button publish to our store, right? But it doesn't answer what about all the stuff that Apple, all of those iBooks that are going to or could be created that Apple is not going to let in their store. I mean, that's a whole other side of this conversation that we haven't even talked about. So what if I want to, under my free speech rights, produce a book that Apple is going to ban or not allow in the iBook store? So I have to find some other platform. I can't use Apple's tool now if I want to sell that. I can give it away.
What you're saying is you can't. Yeah, I guess you can't. Certainly. Yeah, but, so you're saying you can't sell it.
Can you
give it away outside of the iBook store?
I'm sorry, what?
Can you give it away outside of the iBook store?
I could give it away, yes, which is great. I applaud them for that. That's awesome. There's going to be a ton of content that's given away freely. But if I want to profit from it, and I submit it to Apple, and they go, you know what? No, this is racial speak. This is racist speak. This is sexual in orientation. We're not going to carry it on our store. I'm out of luck. You know, what about all that great iBook porn that people want to?
That's a good question. Does freedom of speech extend to freedom to profit off of that speech?
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? And Apple will say, well, no, you can go, use Adobe's tools and make an EPUB, and iBooks will happily open an EPUB, and you can sell your EPUB. You can use some other format. Which
you just can't run it
through
iTunes.
They're absolutely right. Well, no, you just can't run it through the iBooks author. You can't create a quote-unquote iBook and then sell it outside of the iBook store. You can give it away outside the iBook store. You just can't sell it.
You know what's funny is we hold
weird.
Apple.
That's why I'm saying this whole. Sorry, I just want to say this is the point of I was trying to get to about it's a weird clause because nobody's ever done it before. So a lot of people are. I understand why a lot of people are frustrated about it or concerned about it because it puts this weird scenario in play that we've never really had to deal with before.
But sorry, it's funny just how we're holding Apple to this insanely high standard. I guess we should, but we're debating the finer points of a free speech law and, really going deep into this and detailed. And we started the conversation talking about how none of the cell phone carriers can make a product that works, and now they're all stealing from us, Amazing, and of course, we all get called Mac fanatics who are in love with Apple, and we're Apple's biggest critics when it comes down to it.
I think you have to be on both sides. I mean, to be...
Oh yeah.
Fair. I try and be as balanced as I possibly can, and I'm an unabashed fanboy. I mean, I love everything they do, and I love iBooks. I love iBooks author. I don't want to give the wrong impression. I'm just playing that side of the coin because I think it's an important thing that needs to be, brought to light. And I agree with some of the points that are being made that this is weird. Like if I want to make an iBook and I want to have it be porn, Apple's not going to let that in the iBooks. Or I'm assuming at this point that they're not going to let it in. I don't know, but. If I want to profit from that, well, I have to use some other system, and I can use EPUB, which doesn't have DRM or doesn't have any way to kind of protect it. Now, does this, I'm assuming this iBook format has the classic iBook DRM in it, right?
I have not heard.
Like FairPlay. I'm assuming there's a FairPlay layer to this. So let's just go with that because, I mean, I think all iBooks have it, and I can't imagine why the textbooks wouldn't have it.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, it's again, it's weird because I have content I can produce with this tool that they've given me, but if I want to profit from it, I have to go through Apple, and if Apple won't let me profit from it through their store, then I have to find something else and use a different tool, which is perfectly within their right, but it's just a little frustrating and strange, I guess is what I'm trying to point out.
Yeah. All right, so let's bring it around to something a little bit more more hopefully rosy and positive. But
we're going to talk about Stevie Wonder. No, I'm sorry.
iTunes U?
Well, we're going to talk about that in a second, but I also wanted to see, Bill, now that we've talked about it a little bit, you currently publish Beat Week as a PDF.
Yep.
And as Adam brought up before, that opens up in iBooks, which is great. However, the only issue I have with PDFs in iBooks is that they don't work nearly as well as actual books do in the iBooks application. So if you have a two or three column layout, I mean, I don't think you can even select text, can you?
Some of that depends on the PDF reader you're using.
No, I mean in actual iBooks. If you're in iBooks, I don't think you can.
Wow.
I'll play around with it. But is this an exciting announcement for you as a publisher of a publication like this?
Are you know, for a few years now, I've been waiting for the ship to come in as far as Apple coming out with a solution that's thorough enough to actually be worth doing and give up on the PDF format, which is completely outdated. It's just the only one that's just still makes sense. So once I get a chance to look over this, I'm either going to be really excited or it's going to be just another frustrating instance of being so close. And, you know, I mean, it has to be there enough to make sense to do it. And, you know, nothing that they've come out with yet has. And
well, from the looks of it, it seems like, and it, of course, I think right now it needs some tweaks to make it viable for magazines and newspapers. And actually, I'm reading an article written by Andy Notko in the Chicago Sun-Times, and I'm not sure if this is speculative or based on actual information that he has, but he says that... it's easy to see the future of this app. iBooks Author 1.5 will contain additional enhancements for magazine and newspaper publishing. Periodicals present the same sort of e-publishing challenges as textbooks, which is definitely true. And looking at what's available for the textbook publishers, you only need a few tweaks to make it a really great platform for making magazines and newspapers available for the iBook store, maybe not even for the iBook store, but just for a newsstand. You know, this could be very easily adapted, I think, to newsstand, I think, too.
What would those tweaks be? I'm just curious because it seems like in just going through the textbooks that I've looked at that, I mean, it's got multiple column formats, it's got interactivity, it's got a table of contents. I'm trying to think what else you would need to add to make it a quote unquote magazine versus a book.
I think probably just a few refinements in terms of what's available to actually make it all come together, because it's kind of focused right now on a textbook format. And I'm not even sure that with Newsstand, I believe you have to have your own compiled application. Right? It's not just an EPUB format.
Right, but I mean, PDF, be it PDF or... when I'm looking at a digital book, it does not in many ways look very different beyond the things that you mentioned in terms of functionality within the app. Like, you're right, with a PDF, I can't make a selection, I can't make a text note, I can't do some of those sorts of things that I can do in a traditional iBook when I'm viewing it in the iBooks application. But when I'm looking at one of these textbooks, for example, which would be something that could be created with the new iBooks Author, it's you know, what makes it a textbook versus a magazine? It's on my iPad. It's the same format. It's the same screen size. It's the same, you know, it's got two columns or three columns or one column. It has photos. It has hyperlinks. It has, I think the two things are indistinguishable. So it's only really distribution, whether it shows up in iBooks or it shows up in newsstand.
I think that's probably the main difference, because I haven't actually had a chance to get my hands on the application at all. So as far as I know, does it publish directly to the iBook store when you
I think it actually does. So I guess the key things would be just integration on the back end, where you can sell it as a subscription versus a one-off purchase or something like that. But I would imagine for something like that's ad supported, like BeatWeek, you could use the iBook publisher and then just, you know, give it away, have it be ad supported, and, you know, make it free and people could download it. I guess the subscribing is probably the main thing, but that's more on the back end than I would imagine anything else. In terms of the actual tool for creating the content, I know, I think it could be amazing. And for, you know, like a publication like Bill's, you can start adding video clips and audio clips to help promote the music or the artist. You could have, you know, recordings or partial recordings of the interview and integrate that sort of stuff. And you can do some of that stuff with PDF, right, Bill? Or is it mostly you have to hyperlink out to it?
The problem is it depends on what PDF reader the person is using.
Exactly,
the functionality. And you don't want to have an inconsistent experience and broken things in it. So, I mean, the thing is, we'll see, because, I mean, I've been waiting a long time and so have other magazine publishers. And, you know, at this point, we take all the content in the magazine goes on our website throughout the week in full for free, because it's almost like the magazine format has gotten so stale, because we've been waiting years for Apple to give us something that allows us to do a magazine properly, and distribute it properly. And it's not, I mean, that's not just on Apple. It's just knowing that no one else is going to come up with it. And so, you know, if this isn't it, and I mean, from everything you guys are saying, it sounds like this is a good chance to be it. But if it's not, I don't know. I don't know that the magazine format survives too far into the digital age if we have to keep waiting another year for a real solution to finally come out. The PDF is older than dirt. We're only using it because it's the lowest common denominator. I hope this is the solution.
I think another thing that could be a big benefit to magazines in this kind of format would be some integration with web services or web integration. So Bill, you mentioned having the website, right? So you could actually have the magazine interact with the website with things like polls or social kinds of things, comments and stuff like that, where stuff's streaming in live when you have a Wi-Fi connection or something like that. So that'd be cool.
I hope so. It'd be nice. I don't want to get my hopes up too much, because it just feels like we've been on this precipice before, where every respected journalist out there was saying that we're 5 minutes away from the revolution, and then for whatever reason it wasn't.
Did we talk a little bit about how the tool works? I haven't had a chance to try it yet either, Michael. But
no, I have.
The one thing I keep reading a lot of people saying is it's some sort of combination between Keynote and Pages in terms of how it functions and how the assembly goes and things like that.
Yeah, I would imagine so. It kind of seems that way. The layout itself for the actual application from screenshots I've seen looks just like the Keynote presentation builder. And it is also, it's seemingly developed, at least the same guy who is the head of the iWork apps is in charge of developing this application.
Yeah, and I'm excited because it reportedly has some sort of HTML kind of integration, so you can create like HTML widgets. So it sounds like it even has kind of a layer of iWeb thrown in there as well. Like, you know how you had all the widgets that you could pull in iWeb? And I'm hoping that works as some sort of library where people could write different widgets for doing different types of functionality, and then you could just download those and integrate them into your iBook, which would be cool.
Ooh, the possibilities. You guys get me so excited that I might have to... Never mind, I was going to make a joke, but we are, you know, somewhat of an all-ages show here, right?
I mean, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. So we'll leave that joke in
the closet. We get the explicit tag every once in a while.
Do we?
This was a little beyond exclusive, but... or exclusive. What the heck am I saying?
That's all right.
Never mind.
Explicit.
My brain's fried. Did I mention I met Stevie Wonder today? I just want to say it as many times as possible, because... really.
That's
how many
awesome.
Times you get to say that. I know, it's weird. But, you know.
All right, so.
Oh, I saw Brian Wilson perform California Girls this morning, too.
Oh, cool.
I'm just being a dick because I can. But
just do
yeah,
it. That's fine.
As opposed to the other times when I'm on here, right?
No, you're always a joy to have on, Bill.
I'm always a dick because I can be, but that's...
Something like that.
You guys listening wouldn't expect anything less, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why we have you on.
Somebody has to be the prick.
Someone has to be the guy who comes from L.A.
Yeah, I said the same thing twice.
Uh-huh. All right. So there's a third application that Apple introduced, which is the iTunes U app, which I'm really excited about because iTunes U has always been this thing that has some really incredibly great potential to it. But it was kind of shoehorned into iTunes, and even worse on the iPad and the iPhone. If you want to download some iTunes U content, you're basically looking at it in the iTunes store. You browse for it in the iTunes store. And then once you find what you want, you hit download, and then you're downloading into the video app and you're checking everything out in the videos app. And it didn't ever work that well. And so now the app it's a standalone application. So you have all of your courses, all the different collections in a very similar to iBooks format on a shelf. So you tap on whatever collection you want, and you have a big list of all the different, in this case, lectures, and you can see all those items in there. You can see more information about each thing. You can download them, pre-download anything, or you can just stream it right away. And it's just a really great way to – it's what they should have had for a long time. You know, just, I'm looking through it, the ability to mark played or unplayed, streaming, 30-second skip back, all these things that just really should have been there that are finally here for this iTunes U content is finally available.
Yeah. We've talked about iTunes U in the past and how that's one of those resources that's been around for a long time, and there's tons and just volumes of amazing content and lectures and stuff like that that's available. I mean, you basically get to do, I think, I almost wonder sometimes if iTunes U wasn't a Steve Jobs pet project, because he often, you know, and it's in the book, he talks about the fact when he dropped out of college and then was able to just opt in on all these great college courses.
Oh, yeah.
and like find all this great stuff. And this is like the ultimate version of, you know, virtual version of opting in to courses at just incredible universities all over the planet.
Yeah, I'm like, for example, one of my favorite collections I might have mentioned already on this podcast, but there is a course from MIT on aircraft systems engineering, and it's actually the professor of this course is Jeff Hoffman, who you guys may recognize as being one of the astronauts in the first Hubble repair mission. So he was one of the astronauts who originally made the repairs on Hubble, and he teaches courses at MIT. And so this course on aircraft systems engineering, it's actually focused entirely on the space shuttle. And so there are 22 separate lecture videos, each of them about 2 hours in length. And these are MIT lectures. So, for example, I went to, there's stuff on like the orbiter structure and the thermal protection system, aerothermodynamics, which was just way 1,000% over my head. The actual propulsion systems, the space shuttle main engines. There's one of the guys who originally helped to design the space shuttle main engines, do an entire 2-hour lecture on stuff at a very high level. We're talking MIT level courses available completely for free. So there's tons of just amazingly cool stuff in iTunes U that I'm actually very excited to play around and discover what's available. These are, I think is everything in iTunes U free?
Guys, I have to. I'm being called. I have to. I have to go right away back over to the after thing. But I was. thanks so much for having me on the show, and I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. No worries. We'll have you back soon.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Later. See you, Bill.
Bye.
So is all the stuff in iTunes U free? It seems like it is.
As far as I know, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you can, yeah, I'm looking at music technology. I mean, there's just so many different things. Cooking, French. I mean, all these different things. Yeah. So materials, I'm looking through here. There's tons of cool stuff available in iTunes U. So I'm really excited that they have an application finally to facilitate all this content.
Yeah, it really deserves it. To see how it's used.
Yeah,
I haven't downloaded any content into it yet, but I'm planning on checking it out.
Well, I was really happy to see that the content that I had already downloaded into the videos application for that space shuttle lecture series just automatically appeared and migrated over.
Oh, it automatically ported over. Oh, then maybe I do have some content.
And I think there's automatic sync as well available a la the iBooks store. So if you download, you subscribe to something on one device, I think it automatically subscribes you everywhere else. I think so.
Yeah, again, all this stuff is just so new. I haven't, you know, we're recording the evening of the launch. I haven't even gone and watched the video, which I'm assuming is up on Apple's website now.
Yeah,
right?
There's the keynote videos up there. There's also a like an 8-minute introduction video about all this stuff. So yeah, I'm looking at. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff. So that space shuttle course is actually pretty bare bones. It just has the videos from the lectures, but you actually have, so if I'm looking at something that I just grabbed from the homepage of the iTunes U store, you get a lot more. You get basic information. You have all the different posts. You can read more about, I'm looking at read more about potential energy. And that shows you an actual book. You can download a free book from the iBook store. You have all these notes you can take on the course. So, yeah, so this app is like crazy awesome. You have web links. You have applications that you can download, videos, documentation, tons of stuff. This app looks awesome. I am guessing that they talk about it in the actual presentation, but like I said. Haven't had a chance to even look at it. So very cool as well. So I think with that, do you want to, that waterproofing material stuff.
You want to talk about that? The stuff that came out at CES?
HZO. Yeah. It's, I'm sure we talked about this before because this isn't the first time we've heard about this stuff, but essentially what this material does is it provides I believe it's called hydrophobic coating to electronics, which ultimately results in you being able to take an iPhone and completely submerge it in water and have it not be damaged at all. Yeah. Or any sort of other electronic device. I think I heard about this at least a year ago, if not more. But I guess at CES, there were several companies, including HZO and I believe Zag as well, had working demonstrations of this technology. And as far as we can tell, Pocketlint believes that HZO is actually...
HZO, right?
HZO. Yep.
And the other big one was Liquipel, I think was the other company. Those were the two kind of ones that were being promoted at CES pretty heavily in the stuff I was reading.
Yeah. And so the company says that they're talking with Apple about making the iPhone 5 waterproof or, you know, whatever they have next. And honestly, this seems like something that Apple would very much be on board for. This is one of those...
I think any manufacturer makes any kind of device that could, you know, end up in the toilet by accident.
Absolutely.
And into this.
Yeah, you could say, oh, well, they benefit from phones falling in the toilet because someone has to buy another phone. I think that they it costs them more money than it potentially makes them just because they have to deal with all the support of those types of issues.
Yes. Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, it's going to come down to the cost per unit. And these guys were saying that they looked at aftermarket way of doing this, and that's just too expensive because you have to deal with shipping to and from the person, getting the device in, doing the treatment, either that or creating distribution centers or training, you know, setting up places where people can actually take the device and have this process done to it. Whereas if it's just done during manufacturing, you know, it can be cut down to, I haven't seen pricing on it, but let's just assume, you know, it's a few cents to a buck or two a unit.
Yeah. Right? I mean, and something like this, it's a crazy selling point. It's an insane selling point for any phone.
You know, I know they're showing phones, you know, the iPhone, you start the video and then you drop it in a fish tank and then there it is still working.
Yeah. Still playing. I think one of the really cool demos was they had it hooked up to a little battery powered speaker, which was also treated. And so they dunk the iPhone in the tank and then they let the speaker kind of float on top. And you see some water gets actually on top of the speaker and it bounces up and down like. As the speaker is moving, you see the water jumping up off of the speaker and you can completely submerge that too. And it just doesn't harm it at all.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's good stuff. I'm excited for this. Yeah, because it's always a scary thing to use your iPhone in the bathroom. I guess you still don't really, if you get like,
for me, it was always the top shirt pocket when I worked in a real business and not for myself, and I had to wear like, you know, nice shirts with the shirt pocket. I'd inevitably put my phone in there, and you know, you're leaning over to get something, and it slides out.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Or leaning over to put the, the little sanitary collar over the toilet.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I actually did have a one time where I dropped my iPhone in the toilet, and I think I probably talked about it on this show, but thankfully it didn't trip the water sensor, so I just said, I don't know what happened. And they got me a new one, but a toilet is an iPhone's worst enemy. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that'll happen. So on to picks. Bill obviously is no longer here, and we got him in here on short notice. And actually, Jeff, I don't think we actually explained where Jeff is. He's not mad at us. He's just we moved it by one day, and he thought he would be available, and then turned out he had to go to a museum. So he's off having fun right now. So he'll be back next week. But Adam, I'm guessing you have a pick?
You know, I didn't have anything ready, but I did just purchase and download something, and I'm going to pick it because this is an awesome app on the desktop. It's from an awesome developer, and it's got some awesome features, and I know it. I'm going to love the app, and it's Boink's iStop Motion. So I'll try and maybe next time give my review when I've had a chance to play with it, but if you've ever wanted to do stop motion kind of animation on the Mac, and the way to do it is to get Boink's iStop Motion for the desktop, and you can create cool stop motion videos. You know, this is like same kind of stuff Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Nightmare Before Christmas and James and the Giant Peach, you know, all that stuff that Tim Burton's done for Disney. You can do all those kinds of effects with it. And they now have a version available for the iPad. And one of the things that really sold me on it, you know, beyond I think the price right now, I think it's $4. $4.99 introductory pricing. It has the onion skinning, which if you don't know what that is, that means you shoot a video and you can use the back or the front camera. So you shoot a picture, and then when you're working on setting up the next shot, it'll kind of show a ghosted image of the shot you just took so that you can know, you know, what's moved in your scene and stuff like that. And so you shoot all the individual pictures and it stitches them together into a video. It's pretty simple, straightforward stuff, right? But one of the things that is always cool is obviously the iPad 2 camera is not the highest quality, right?
Right.
So they have another free app that they also sell with it called iStop Camera. And you can actually set up and use your iPhone 4, your iPhone 4S, and its camera as the camera for your shoot, and then trigger it from the iStop software.
So it's a remote.
Set up your iPhone on a tripod, set up your scene, start playing around with it, you know, do camera moves. You can do all that kind of cool stuff with another camera and then bring that into iStop Motion.
So
I'm super excited to be able to play with this. And I just know it's going to be awesome because the Boinks stuff is just really good software. Everything I've ever purchased from them has been fabulous. So
it's actually remote triggering. So you can take the photo from your you hit the button.
Yeah, through
iPad.
The Wi-Fi. I think Wi-Fi. I don't know if it uses Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, but
probably Wi-Fi. Yeah. Wow, that's really cool. So it's actually called iStop Motion Remote Camera, and that's free. And that works, of course, with the iStop Motion for iPad.
Software for the iPad, yeah. So you can create all your own stop motion movies.
Awesome. Man, that's very cool. And it, like I said, $5. And I'm not sure how... Is that a promotional? Yeah, special introductory.
It's promotional pricing right now, yeah. But I mean, like... For comparison, I think iStop Motion on the desktop starts around $40 or $50.
Oh, I want to say. Yeah, just go.
And if you get the pro version, then you know it goes up from there. Obviously on the iPad, it's a slimmed down experience. But I mean, for just playing around with stop motion, how fun is that? I mean, that's just, you know, spend a Saturday, get some Legos or some little toys and make some little movies or some clay, you know.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right, so my pick is kind of half for the iPhone and the iPad and just half in general for your computer. And it's something that's just captivated me for the last week and a half. And I haven't really been able to, my productivity's kind of gone down a little bit because of it, but it's turntable.fm, which has been around for a little bit. Are you familiar with that, Adam?
I've heard of it before. Is it, that's not like a Last.fm Spotify kind of thing, is it?
It's about music. In a social kind of way. So
it's social music though, right?
Yeah. And so, okay. So here's how it works. You go to turntable.fm and you can sign in with your Facebook or Twitter, which is great. You don't really have to create a new account. You just hook it up that way. And so once you're in, you're presented with a list of rooms, and each one of these rooms within it has a bunch of virtual characters. And these characters represent other people on the internet. And so you have a dance floor and you have a DJ table, and people can go up there and play music for everybody in that room. So you can have from 1 to 5 or maybe 2 to 5 DJ spots. And so whoever's up there chooses a song and they play it. And as you're listening as one of the audience members or another DJ, you can either rate the song as being awesome or as lame. And there's a little meter down at the bottom that shows how the audience likes the music. And so every time a DJ gets an awesome, he gets a point. And so he can use that to change his avatar. And of course you get more credibility if you have more points. But if a song gets too many lames, it'll actually get skipped. So if someone goes in there and starts screwing around there, you're maybe in the 80s room and you decide you're going to play some like hardcore, like 90s music or something like that. Everybody will start laming it, and it won't get more than like 15 seconds of play before the next DJ gets to go up.
Yeah, don't be playing hardcore 90s music in the 80s room.
Yeah, that's, what are you doing? That's craziness. But so there are different, I mean, the rooms range from just a standard, oh, let's listen to the 80s kind of room to really esoteric sort of things like it's the Pink Bear room. So you can go in there and only people who have characters that are the little pink bear or the yellow bear. And so everybody has to be dressed as the yellow bear in order to be in that room. and it's really cool in that you can do it on your computer. So it's Mac or PC, and you're actually up there with your character, and it determines which platform you're on. So if you're on a Windows computer, it'll show you up there with a Windows computer. And if you're on a Mac, it shows you on a Mac. And there's even an app. So if you're on your iPhone, it'll show you up there DJing from your iPhone. And like I said, the great thing about it is all the music is stored there. It's stored on their servers. So you don't have to, you're not streaming from iTunes. You're not uploading files. You're not doing anything like that. You're just picking the songs from their library and playing them there. If they don't have something on there, you can upload it too. But it has to be an MP3, which it really isn't that hard. So you can actually
DJ that work?
From your iPhone. What?
I'm just curious how that works from a licensing standpoint.
You can only play, there are certain limits on how often you can play a certain artist and how many songs from a certain album you can play.
So they must pay licensing to the labels to have the service run.
I think they do, but I mean, the service is just fantastic. I've been hanging out in the 80s room. My brother's been hanging out in the dubstep room. I told him about it a couple days ago, and he's just hasn't been doing anything else.
The what room?
Dubstep.
Okay, cool.
I mean, the great thing about it is it's user-generated radio. So there's a little diversity built into it. So instead of listening to the radio and it's the same old guy, same old DJ doing it, the person there who's actually picking the songs is compelled to actually pick stuff that the audience, the immediate obvious audience likes. So you can just chill there and listen to the music and you don't have to DJ at all. You don't have to do that. You can just stand there and enjoy it. You don't have to rate it or do anything. So it essentially turns into free radio for a possibly very, tight genre that one might be interested in. So you can go into the indie chill acoustic room if you're feeling a little down and you just want to chill out with some indie acoustic music. So it's
fun.
Really cool. Yeah, I like it a lot. Now the only thing is the asterisk to this whole pick is that the pick is ultimately going to be the iPhone app, which is free. The app is very, very crashy right now, and doesn't work too well. However, it's the only way to get it on your iPhone, because while everything in terms of the interface and the little characters that dance and all that are in HTML5, the actual streaming part is Flash.
Duh.
Unless you're on your iPhone, in which case the app takes care of whatever the Flash does. However, I've heard that they're actually working actively right now on making the iPhone app better. So
because they didn't tell you, it's just a compiled Adobe Air app with a wrapper.
Probably. I mean, it's terrible, but it's free, and this is the way to use it. So my recommendation for anybody who's interested: just go to turntable.fm on your computer. If you like it, if you get hooked to it, then use it on your iPhone.
If you can.
You should be able to use it. It's a little hairier when you actually try to DJ yourself.
So it's better for listening than...
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
But you can definitely DJ from it. There's something else I was going to say. I can't... the way I got turned on to it is actually the Hood Internet, a DJ duo from Chicago, sent an email saying, hey, we're going to do a live DJ set on Turntable at 5 p.m. I think it was like last week or something. And so I pulled it up while I was working at the paper company, and I was able to listen to a live DJ set from the Hood Internet while I was working, which is really cool. So they've had a lot of big names on there. They've like had Snoop Dogg and a bunch of other people on there doing actual DJ sets. And so and Steve Aoki, I believe, was recently on there too. So a very cool project in general. But the app is also something I'm looking forward to, especially on the iPad. Once they come up with an iPad app, I'm going to be really excited about that. So check it out, turntable.fm. And with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. You can review us in iTunes. We love that. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. You can find Bill Palmer at Beat Week Magazine, beatweek.com. Also, twitter.com/Bill Palmer, I believe. Is that it, Adam? Do you know? I guess I can check. Twitter.
Sorry, I was on mute because I have this cold. So,
Bill, yeah, it's twitter.com/. No, I think he switched to BeatWeek, didn't he?
Yes.
Okay, so it's twitter.com/BeatWeek for Bill Palmer. And of course, you can find Adam Christensen at the MattCast. It's mattcast.com. He also has the member version of the MattCast, member.mattcast.com.
Yep.
And what do you got for us this week on that show? Anything to talk about?
It's probably going
to
be tonight, and it's going to be going over all of the announcements from today. Okay. So
cool. Yeah. And twitter.com/mattcast.
Yeah.
Find them there.
That's where you find me.
Yep. You know, I'm on Twitter at Michael Johnson. If you want to check that out, at Little Reviews is also where I review things in little Twitter sized chunks. And with that, we'll talk to you next week on We Have Communicators.
An iPod, an iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. How are we going to communicate this? A stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do?